Yes, we're continuing our recording of.
We didn't do anything on the second.
Oral history, Deborah Gordon and Roseanne Ariel interviewing Sue Elkin.
Okay, why don't we go back to, let's see, your family life in terms of discipline. In terms of your relationship with your parents, can you say any comment or anything on that?
Well, I guess I shouldn't generalize. Aren't most kids afraid of dad?
Yes.
Then I certainly was no different. Mm-hmm. All my mother had to do was I'll tell Papa, and that took care of everything. Mm-hmm. Mother was not one for punishing. Mother was very soft. Mother, incidentally, was very deaf. And in those days, no one explained anything about these things. All you knew was your mother didn't hear well. It was an embarrassment that you had to raise your voice. The only one who never raised his voice was my dad, who spoke directly to Mother.
She could understand
him. She understood, and I guess in her own way read his lips. Mm-hmm. Where I shouted, and then I didn't want to go out with her because I would have to holler,
right,
never realizing that I really didn't have to.
Did you have hobbies when you were younger?
I had nothing because I don't think you even had hobbies in those days.
Did you write?
I didn't do a damn thing. I was scared shitless. Because, you must delete much of this. Because I could not compete with my sister. I mean, look what blazed the trail. And then I had a brilliant brother who rebelled in his own way, though. And I, after having more than one teacher say, how can anybody coming from a family like yours be so stupid, I figured, what's the use of doing anything? So I just didn't.
You mentioned your brother, but
we didn't discuss that. He was killed in an automobile accident at the age of 26.
And he was an attorney in Pittsburgh?
Mm-hmm.
So being in the shadow of both your brother and sister was very hard.
See, Jimmy knew how to rile her. I didn't, and I wouldn't have dared rile my sister. But Jimmy was a merciless team.
So that was how he stood his ground. Right?
He had his ways of doing it and didn't care about resorting to blackmail either.
What happened when they left home?
Jim left home. He went to Penn State. But then when he came back to Pittsburgh and went to law school, he lived at home again. There was no such thing as you went to school. Where you lived, you lived at home.
He didn't marry, though.
No. And then Ethel left, and he died, and I was the one at home.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not pleasant.
How old were you then when you were the only one at home?
21.
So let's see.
You want to know what the difference in values between then and now?
Sure.
In those days, you didn't have plastic. You had what did they call them? A charge coin or a, they were made out of metal, and what the devil did they call them? Wasn't a charge plate. But whatever. My brother gave me his for my 21st birthday, which was right before shortly before he died. He gave me his Gimbal's charge and told me I could charge anything I wanted up to $25. Would you like to know what I got for $25?
What?
I got a dress with a jacket. I got a dress with a long coat to match the dress. I got a hat. I got shoes. And I got a new one. $25.
It sounds like you had a nice relationship with your brother.
Yeah, it was. It was starting to get real good.
Did you attend Hebrew school or Sunday school?
I attended Sunday school, yeah. I was confirmed. We all were confirmed from Rabbi Shaw.
And then after confirmation?
Goodbye.
That was it. Okay. Did you go on to a college? You didn't want to compete with...
My sister, I went to business school for a short, very brief period, but that was not for me. I was musically inclined. I played the violin. I really wanted to go to music school. But that was out of the question. Then my sister said that I was to go to college, and her word was law. And she paid my tuition because my dad could not afford it at the time.
Where did you go to go?
I went to Pitt for 1 year. I suffered through a year of it. I think I cut more than I attended. When they told me what I was going to take, I had no say in the matter. The school is telling me what I'm going to take. I'm supposed to take the history of art. I didn't care a hoot in hell about art. I wanted music. I couldn't have music.
Why were they so...
In Shanley High School, when I wanted to take harmony. You don't get to take harmony until you're a junior. Somehow or other, I got that harmony when I was a sophomore.
So you went to Alderdice and then you went to Shanley.
I transferred to Shanley when I was in ninth grade.
Uh-huh. And then you graduated from Shanley?
Mm-hmm.
And you played music. You played an instrument throughout high school. Is that it?
Yeah.
Were your family against you studying music?
Oh, no.
Or that it was too...
Oh, they after all, remember the people who came from Europe, if they weren't educated, had a husky respect for education, but were so knowledgeable and had such a love of music. I was the baby, so I was dragged to every opera, every musical comedy, every play that was presented, I had to attend. First of all, there were no babysitters, so they took me. And I developed a love of music.
What happened after your year in Pitt?
And I will say I was still playing the violin. I went to work for my dad.
And what did he do at the time?
Real estate.
That was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
What was
and
that?
Then...
What were some of the things that you did for him?
Photographic.
Did you write it?
No. Not when you're working for your father and it's 5 o'clock or time to leave and someone comes in and your father says, take a lease, draw up a lease, and you want to get the hell out of there.
And when did you meet your husband?
Dad finally had to close the office. Things were too bad and operated from home. I got a job in an insurance office.
The city at that time must have been very difficult because of that living with real estate. I mean, if that was during the Depression, I'm sure there wasn't much real estate going on, transactions.
There wasn't. And that was the time when the apple vendors were prominent on every street corner. I'm sure you've heard of that. Men, a lot of businessmen paid a nickel for their lunch, bought an apple, and that was it. Yeah. And I got a job in 36 or 37, I don't remember when, which year, for at MP Can's office.
Is that the insurance agency?
Yeah.
MP Can.
Started as a switchboard operator and ended up as head of the bond department. And I worked there until 1940 when I got married.
Did you live at home the entire time while you were working until you got married?
Oh, yeah. And after.
Tell us a little bit about your husband and when.
Well, when I met Will, he was going to pharmacy school. He did not go directly to college after high school. He worked as a deckhand on the river.
Really?
Yeah. For 4 years. While his brothers and sister went to school, he helped out at home and saved money to go to college.
How did you meet?
Happened to be hanging out of a window looking like an advertisement or something, you know. I was visiting a mutual friend, people that he knew and who were friends of ours, and we happened to be looking out the window, and he always looked up at this apartment as he passed and saw me and got my name and called me.
And how long, what year did you get married, you said?
40.
Did you continue working after you got married?
No. I had planned to, but my health was such that I was not able to work.
Can you tell us about your health?
I would rather not.
Can you tell us a little bit about the health care at that time? In terms of what kinds of the health systems were like, and compare them then to now?
I don't think they're any different now. They didn't know a goddamn thing then. They don't know a goddamn thing now because they really don't check things out too much.
You need a private physician, or?
Honey, 5 private physicians said everything was in my head for so many years that everyone believed it. That is, and these were top-notch men. That does not go in the interview. It took a first-class analyst to tell me that what I need is to get myself a good internist, get away from everybody I ever saw before, and when I'm ready for that name, he will give it to me. And that was when I found out that it was indeed not in my head.
Tell us a little bit about your children. Or you have two children, right?
Mm-hmm.
Boy and a girl.
Mm-hmm.
When were they born?
Jim was born in 1942 and Carol in 1947.
And you have grandchildren?
Yes.
I know of one. My son plays with him.
Yeah.
And Jimmy has
two.
Brings us a total of three. I'm interested in, a lot of people are interested in your poetry. Could you tell us a little bit about when your interest, or when you knew that you had something?
I didn't know I had anything. I happened to be a master at dirty limericks.
You used to practice that for fun?
No. I used to write short doggerel type things that sounded cute but meant nothing. And then when Carol left and moved to California, I started putting a lot of things down on paper. They were pretty god-awful. They sounded nice, but they were not poetry. Because I knew nothing about poetry. I thought poetry had to rhyme. And it didn't matter how you obtained that rhyme. I found out that it matters a great deal, that there is more to poetry than rhyming, because there's nothing wrong with a good poem that rhymes if you have your meter correct and you are not reaching for a word to rhyme that really has nothing to do with the rest of the poem. And if the poem has what a poem should have, namely imagery and metaphor, for instance. And I never even knew what those words meant.
Well, did you take some classes or did you meet someone?
Well, I wanted to take classes, but I couldn't take the commitment because I lived a minute-to-minute type of existence. I could not take the commitment. If I went to a class and missed three classes after, what good is the class? So I wanted to get someone who would at least steer me in the right direction, work with me for a while at home, do something like that, which was really quite an experience trying to find somebody. I approached Pitt first, and by way of speaking to the heads of the English department, etc., which did nothing. They could come up with nobody. They would give people certain, they gave my name to one or two people who really were not interested in the money nor in the time, the one day a week that it would involve. I asked them just to put notes up on the bulletin board and see if anyone would answer. There was no response. So I tried made the awful mistake of speaking or trying to get in touch with Jerry Costanza at CMU. Costanza is notorious for his poor manners, for his lousy attitude. And after, I think, my 10th call, his secretary said, if he doesn't return his wife's calls, you can't expect him to return yours.
So you just call on your own without any reference?
No, I called to see if he could recommend someone from CMU. Then I called the head of the English department at Dr. Licarella at Community College, because Allegheny Community College. And he said, oh, he was so enthused, he has a couple people, and he will get back to me. And I waited 2 weeks, and I never heard from him. And I called him back. He said, isn't it funny? I was just thinking of you. There is someone that I know will be perfect for you, and I haven't been able to reach him, but I did want you to know I hadn't given up. 3 weeks later, I called him again. He said, didn't so-and-so call you? I said, no, he didn't. He said, I don't understand it. I gave him your name and phone number. I will call him and get back to you immediately. A week later, I called him again. And I said, Dr. Licarella, this is Sue Elkins. I just wanted to say, I think you're a goddamn liar. I don't think you ever called anybody. I don't think you put forth one iota of effort on my behalf. I think you have given me one of the grandest runarounds I ever got. And for all this, I really don't say thank you. I say goodbye and I have left. And that is almost verbatim. I may have added a few more expletives in that. Then I called CMU and just had them put up a notice on the bulletin board, and from that notice I got one call. That was the call that proved truthful, because this was a fellow young man who was working on his doctorate and teaching, and who needed money, and who was willing, just for the love of it, to work with me, but he had to see some of the things I had written to see if there was anything to work with. And it took him a couple weeks to go through what I had given him and get back to me. And I started to work with him.
What was his name? Or you don't want to,
Doesn't matter, you can put it in Alan Levine.
How long ago was this? When did this
first start? When I was 64. Actually, by the time I started with Alan, I was 65.
He taught you?
He didn't basically teach me. The few things he taught me were the basic thing of a poem is you can't write about anything you know nothing about. You must know what you're writing. And the poem must be an experience. If I am relating an experience that I had, as I did in a poem, in a certain poem I am thinking of, when I passed the center, and they used to have the playground outside, and it was nap time, and I wrote a poem about playground, nap time at nursery school, but the poem was really about the empty playground. and what I saw there, or did not rather see there, that was the experience, and that was what I tried to convey in the poem. And the poem was a full page. However, when Alan and I finished with the poem, it was about 16 lines. Just not my thoughts as I passed or got to the center, but simply what I saw. And that was the experience. And that is what I learned from him. You write what you know, what you see, what you feel. Honestly, poetry is about emotion.
How long did you work with him?
I'm still seeing him. Mm-hmm. Not real often, but...
You've had some poetry published and been successful in years. How does that make you feel? Or do you continue with it? It's continual?
Well, at the moment I am going through a dry spell, so to speak, but I still keep writing. Good, bad, and different, I write. That's the only way you keep you get out of a dry spell. But I've had, at this point, 500 poems published in various magazines. And I have a fifth book due out at the end of the year.
I'm watching the time also with the tape because I don't want
a good 5 minutes. I think discussing your poetry is very interesting to me. How has that affected your life since this whole thing happened? Does it, obviously,
one whole thing?
Your poetry and your focus on being able to communicate it and be successful with it.
It hasn't affected my life, really. I do what I do. As a housewife, which is what I am, and I write. It hasn't changed anything for me. I don't think.
What advice would you give? There's so many people that would love to be poets, but they do try to get their poetry published, and they have such a difficult time. What advice would you?
I would tell them to first make sure that what their writing is worth working with, getting someone who knows to look at their work. Then, and I don't know in what order I would give this, because I would suggest that they, one, take a class and begin in poetry at the university, because they usually have night courses, and join a workshop, be it at the university or an independent one. My workshop that I founded 12 years ago has the requirement before anyone could join, they have to submit 3 to 4 poems.
What's the name of your workshop?
Squirrel Hill Poetry Workshop.
Okay. And you founded that?
Yes.
How many people participate in the workshop?
Too many.
You mean not all the people are?
No, it's just grown. Large. At this point, we have 16 members, which is rough. I no longer am in charge of the workshop. I turned it over because of my health. That was the most painful thing I ever had to do. it was much easier to let go of the kids than let go of the workshop.
Really?
I think because I am still a member of the workshop.
Is it run the same way as you were there?
Oh, yes, it's run the same way, but too many members have said to me, if you drop out, the workshop's going to die. I said, I'm not about to drop out. And that's not being very nice to Kermit. If I drop out, the workshop's going to die. Kermit is a brilliant guy, far more brilliant than I.
So one of the members.
He was the oldest member of the workshop in terms of belonging to it.
So it's important to have a group of people that are interested.
You bring a different poem each week.
What is some of your favorite poetry? I mean, do you have a favorite poet? How would you describe your own poetry?
I don't have a favorite poet. I like Whitman's work. I don't have a favorite poet. I don't read poetry.
How would you describe your poetry? Is there a new school?
I don't know what new school means, Debbie.
No, I
really
mean,
don't.